Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Today we're at the Sandton Mediclinic in Johannesburg, South Africa, talking to Dr. Nadine Bruser and Dr. Carla Novel. I will briefly introduce them to you. Dr. Bruser is a specialist surgeon with a primary interest in oncological breast surgery as part of her multidisciplinary process. She works with the Morningside Breast Care Group, and she was involved with the creation of the Breast Interest Group of Southern Africa, a group that has optimal breast care as a goal for all people in South Africa. She works in private practice, operating across three clinics. Dr. Carla Norville is also a surgeon in private practice in Johannesburg, and she works across two practices. Her focus is on plastic and reconstructive surgery, and she played an instrumental role in setting up the first oncoplastic breast unit in the state sector of South Africa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're both surgeons that have invested into a woman's health, and I'd like to start the show with some statistics that I found on a study that was commissioned by the Department of Labour, which drew on information from the Healthcare Professional Council of South Africa, which showed that there's a trend between male versus female of a 70%, 30% status in terms of registered professionals. What challenges do you think that women face entering the medical field and perhaps staying in the medical field?
Well, firstly, the usual role that women are expected to fill, i.e. that of a mother and or wife, I think that clashes with the role as a medical professional when it comes to time and other interests.
So balancing between home commitments, family responsibilities, and still fulfilling the professional commitments.
I think that becomes particularly a problem with specialisation and going into a field of your choice and the commitments involved.
And do you see that as a time factor after going through your general studies, because the specialisation happens post that, and that is another investment in time?
Absolutely. I think it's very difficult to balance being a mother and specialising in any field.
Especially in the surgical field, because it takes up all your time and all your energy. You have to spend about once every 3 nights at the hospital the whole night. You have to operate quite a lot, and your mind is always busy with your patients.
And then you also have to write exams and do presentations, and it does take up an awful lot of time and commitment.
Well, sometimes I think doctors don't sleep, especially in surgery.
Sleep?
What's
yeah,
that?
Exactly.
And in your experiences when you entered into the medical field, did you find any challenges that you encountered from a gender perspective?
We both studied pre-grad at a traditional South African male-based universities. So, yes, gaining access to studying medicine was the first one, because there's a gender differentiation, and when you are chosen to study medicine, a certain amount of girls and boys are chosen to start off with. Then going through the whole pre-grad study, it's not easy. You're not really always treated like your male counterpart.
And do you find that from a peer point of view or from the teaching environment?
Both, but I found it more from teaching.
I think things have changed there. I think if we looking at the students now, they seem to be more or less differentiation between women and men, as well as, you know, you can definitely see a difference in the race.
Lots of, lots more tolerance amongst students now for gender, race, everything else.
I think you must have built up a fair amount of resilience by going through that process.
Yeah, you learn to grow a spine, if you can call it that.
And definitely toughen up, I think, absolutely.
And Dr. Noble, previously to our discussion on air, you mentioned that you'd had an experience in the UK as part of your medical career. Could you elaborate on some of those challenges?
Yes, so I went to Stellenbosch and I obtained my primary medical degree, and then I went to the UK to do surgery, just to get a different perspective on surgery. And I found it to be very male-dominated, and not only that, it was also pro-British, and so it was more difficult, I think, obtaining my surgical degree there.
And did you feel that almost, so from a cultural point of view, on being pro-British, that not really wanting an outsider coming in from another
environment? And then also being pro-British boys, you know, so as a female it was more difficult, and blatantly so. You know, people would point it out as if it wasn't obvious.
And how did you deal with it?
You know, I think you just have to do what you want to, and I was quite passionate about doing surgery and to the best of my ability, and I just put my head down and did what I needed to. I sometimes would, you know, make a comment or disagree with something, but I think I just worked hard and got my exams, and I knew what I was there for and looked past all of those things.
And often in environments like that, women sort of have to work twice as hard, become more competitive, because it's not only being judged in terms of the merits and your capabilities, but you have this gender boundary that you have to overcome as well.
You know, it's often easier than you think, you know, so they say you have to be better than them, but then you already are, so, so it's not always that difficult. I think they're often fooled by the fact that they then look at you from a different perspective, and it's easier then to show them how you can actually perform, even though you're a woman.
We will be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Chaka Chaka, the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador on Malaria in Africa. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. We're talking women in the medical profession, specifically in terms of surgeons and breast health, with Dr. Nadine Bruiser and Dr. Carla Noble. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, picking up on our discussion, in terms of your choices and your decisions for going into this field, why did you choose to go this route?
Well, when I started working as an intern, it was definitely the most rewarding field. I rotated through medicine, through pediatrics, and I never really felt at home like I did in surgery.
And particularly in dealing with breast issues and breast health care?
Well, my internship and com service I did in Mafeking, where at that time there wasn't really that much focus on breast. Then after I specialised, I spent a couple of years in the breast unit in Barra, where that definitely tickled my fancy, yes.
And Dr. Bruce, so in terms of your area, you have come through and you're really focusing on the surgery, which we're looking at it from a cancer point of view, that is about removing the malignant tissue. And
it's everything basically from diagnosing it, i.e. the biopsy, the informing the patient, then removing the cancer to the best of my ability, and then referring the patient to the right people for the reconstruction and also the further adjuvant care.
And Dr. Nova, your work really complements what Dr. Bruce is doing, because your focus is on the reconstructive element.
Yes, and this is how we form a team, so that the patient gets the best outcome from both sides. removing all the cancer and then reconstructing the breast as well. So I came back from the UK and realised that there were many mastectomies being done in the state sector, but very few breast reconstructions. And I just thought there was something wrong in this equation. And so I became more involved as soon as I qualified as a plastic surgeon in the breast clinic, and I went to the breast clinic to promote breast reconstruction because I thought there were all these women who were either flat-chested or lopsided walking around, and encouraging them to have a breast reconstruction, breast reconstructions.
And you'd mentioned that there was a higher rate of mastectomies versus reconstruction. It was almost a 6-month delay.
Yes, no, absolutely. There was a huge discrepancy, you know, 10 mastectomies a week and one reconstruction every 6 months that we were doing. So, yes, I did think it was a...
And you've spoken about almost reducing that time frame so that things are happening at the same time. Could you just elaborate on that?
So I think the old-fashioned way was very much to do the mastectomy, and a lot of the old-fashioned surgeons made big cuts and removed a lot of tissue unnecessarily, and left patients really deformed. And so it's much more difficult to reconstruct those patients later on. I think now there's a lot more consideration when doing a mastectomy or lumpectomy to leave tissue or skin that you don't have to remove, and that would then make the reconstruction easier. And so we work together and often would do the reconstruction or the foundation of the reconstruction at the same time as the mastectomy, so that patients wake up with something there. And I think that gives them more hope.
And with these, looking at issues, for instance, we take breast cancer, it's largely, again, you'll be the experts here on this point of view, but breast cancer is largely an issue that is a female problem. And do you think that as being woman doctors, that perhaps your female patients feel more comfortable in terms of relating to you because you're a woman? And by the same point, do you also feel that because you're a woman, that you have greater empathy towards female patients than male doctors?
Definitely. I have been told that by a couple of patients now. And you can see the patients just feel more comfortable when they come into your rooms, and they're so happy because they see it's a lady doctor. Yes.
No, I must say, I also find that. I also try and listen to my patients and reconstruct them in such a way that they are happy. And so, you know, sometimes I have patients who come to me from colleagues who say, and I told him I didn't want to go big and I'm too big and I hate these breasts, and, you know, it's like that they weren't heard and they weren't listened to. And I really try and listen to my patients and give them different options. Also with the reconstruction, even if we're talking about implants, they're different implants that you can use in different situations, and listening to them and hearing them.
And with the therapies and the treatments that you undergo, do you tailor them to an individual?
Absolutely, of course we do. You look at it, look at the patient as an individual and look at their cancers and their breasts and what their circumstances are.
What they want and need.
Absolutely, and then refer them on if you see that they may need to see a psychologist, for instance, or so.
And do you take into account aspects, for instance, from financial means, affordability?
You have to indeed do that. You can't offer a patient or force a patient to undergo a certain treatment which they simply cannot afford or have time for, because you're just going to chase your own tail by doing that.
I think both Nadine and I worked in the state sector for quite a while. I worked at Helen Joseph Hospital for 6 years after I qualified, and that's where we started the oncoplastic breast clinic. And I don't think that breast reconstruction or good breast cancer surgery should be only for patients who have the money or medical aids. I think it should be there for all women across the...
Definitely, but the specific focus, and sometimes to the patient's detriment, the focus on breast conservation, which means that you're going to have radiation afterwards. sometimes the patients simply can't. They can't afford to get there to have the radiation, and I've seen the outcome of those. The cancer simply comes back very, very quickly.
And when you're mentioning about the accessibility and affordability, are there trusts, are there foundations in place?
They're very few and far between, I find. I think we also, for patients who can't afford it, you know, try and make a plan or refer them on. I think it's unfair to charge patients who have to come to see you by taxi, five times medical aid rates. I think that's really just cruel. You have to look at the financial situation as well and do something, you know, for the community. And although I don't work in the state sector anymore, I'm prepared to do more pro bono work in that way. I'm in private practice, but what I'm saying is that I would tailor my rates accordingly, you know, if a patient had financial problems.
I've done some preliminary reading, but with the cancer literature, it always remarks on having early treatment. But often early detection, I think, in almost any situation, requires more education. And over years, I know there's been a number of different publicity campaigns, particularly about breast health, and often it falls into October in South Africa. It's sort of the big drive on breast cancer awareness. Have you seen the effects of these campaigns in terms of greater detection or more successful treatments?
Yes and no. Recently, I had a lady that went to a GP with a breast complaint, and he didn't do a mammogram, although she was above the age of 40. Yes, you now and again see patients that come to you after they have their routine mammograms, which they go for because the TV said they should. But often you see these sad cases where they were delayed.
No, I also think that there is often a component of denialism amongst women. They feel the lump, they think it might be cancer, and they choose not to talk to anyone about it or go for testing, and I think that needs to change. I think early detection does make a difference, but it also depends on the type of cancer and the personality, if you like, of the cancer itself. So that it is first prize to pick it up early, but there are other factors involved as well.
And are you also seeing differences in terms of culture, so, and most impoverished and disadvantaged communities such as rural areas versus urban areas? Are there big discrepancies there on awareness?
Discrepancies on awareness or discrepancies on accessibility and differences in denial? I must say the more impoverished communities often present much, much, much later. I don't know if it's just because of the access issue or whether it's the denial thing.
Or uneducated, perhaps, yes. That's definitely like that. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in the States as well, the patients often presented very late, and it's terrible to see, you know, these fungating tumours, and most of the patients had to go for radiotherapy, which, you know, you have to then reconstruct in a certain way, and I suppose, and to my advantage, I was able to then perfect those techniques. But yes, it was actually quite refreshing going into private practice and not seeing as many late presentations.
But if you think, if it was you, you are now, say, 70 years old, you are the caregiver for your daughter's three children that are all under the age of 5. You stay 20 k's from your closest clinic. It will cost you 5 rand to get there. You don't have 5 rand. You have no income. You have to feed all these children. If you go, who's going to look after them? So there are so many considerations why these poor people do that.
Socioeconomic factors.
So her needs become secondary to the needs of her families and the people that need her more than she needs to look after herself. It's very sad. We will be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka Chaka, an ambassador for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. We're talking women in the medical profession, specifically in terms of surgeons and breast health, with Dr. Nadine Bruiser and Dr. Carla Noble. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, picking up on our discussion, in terms of the other countries in the continent, do you do a lot of work with different organizations?
Not really outside the boundaries of our country, but yes, I've got quite extensive experience from areas like Soweto and the more rural type of areas, yes.
And Dr. Noble, you mentioned that you did some work with the Smile Foundation, and that was on a different element, but still in reconstructive space.
As a registrar, we were involved, and the...
Could you tell us just a little bit more about the Smile Foundation, what it is?
Well, it's an NGO, and the aim is to go to poorer countries where they do not have plastic surgeons to fix... cleft palates and lips, and often the children are born with a defect and they walk around like that for a long time, and there's just no surgeon who can help them. So as a group we would go to different countries and then perform from a mandate for a week, all day surgery on the cleft lips and palates, and this is why the smile, so that they can smile again. But my concern about the program was that there was no follow-up afterwards. So often with these children, they would need speech therapy, ear, nose and throat surgery, orthodontics, maxillofacial surgery afterwards, and that we were going in there and fixing the lips, but not really fixing the problem around it. And yes, I think that's often important as well, to not only just have a quick fix, but develop more of a support program around if it's like that.
And do you find that you bring that thinking into your own practice with the work that you're doing now on having that more holistic perspective, the support components?
Oh, definitely. Yes, I think it's really important to listen to your patients again and to individualize treatment and to identify when they may need support such as lymphatic drainage or psychotherapy. So,
Dr. Bruiser, you mentioned that in terms of your treatment of cancer, you look at the disease very holistically, so you go right through from the diagnosis stage through to prescribing individualized treatments, up to surgery, looking at what other support mechanisms or perhaps other professionals need to be involved in the treatment. Can you elaborate on these steps?
Any type of treatment should have one person that's organizing or directing the treatment. Otherwise, patients start to feel like they're hanging in the air or they don't know who to approach. So where I come in, patients generally are referred to me from GPs or radiologists either way, and then the actual diagnosis of cancer needs to be done on tissue sampling. So either the radiologists can do core biopsies or FNAs.
And if you could just elaborate on the acronym, FNA.
Okay, fine needle aspirations. Now, that's a whole academic argument that we're not going to have right now, which one you should do. But core biopsy is just with a bigger needle, so you get more tissue. And you can do more tests on that to be more definitive about your diagnosis. Now, if that's not possible, or if that has been done and the results are inconclusive or non-representative or something, if you can't use the results that you get because they're inconclusive or not representative, then I say I would go and I would do an excisional biopsy where I get the whole lump out and we can test the whole lump for malignancy. Now, that doesn't happen in all cases, but as you may know, breast cancer diagnosis works in three tiers. You have to do physical examination, your imaging, and your tissue diagnosis or your tissue histology, and all of those three must point to the same thing. Either they must say it's definitely not cancer, or yes, it definitely is cancer. And we generally keep on scratching until they all point in the same direction.
So you've got a three test almost as a fail-safe, and every one of those tests leads to the same results, then you can be conclusive about the findings.
Exactly. If your examination, you think it's probably benign, your imaging shows something that definitely raises concern for cancer, and then your biopsy again comes back with abnormal cells or non-representative, you need to carry on looking and making sure that this patient gets the right diagnosis and the right treatment.
And with aspects like gene therapy?
Gene therapy.
And I raise that because there was a whole publicity element. It was earlier this year where we had Angelina Jolie writing an article in the New York Times talking about her experiences undergoing a double mastectomy and pointing to the fact that her mother had died of breast cancer and it was related to a specific gene. Do you think cases like this help to highlight more awareness, that someone has become very public about it?
It does raise awareness, however, not always the right type of awareness. I've had many patients come to me and say, listen, my great-grandma died of breast cancer, so can I go for genetic testing? And unfortunately, it's more complicated than that. And the public is not informed properly about that. The cost, firstly, of this type of testing runs into thousands, tens of thousands of rands. The medical aids don't pay for it. And often we don't know what to test for because you're testing for a mutation. And if you don't know which mutation you're looking for, i.e. if you don't have the great-grandma's genes that you can go and test, you're chasing your own tail. You don't know what you're looking
for. You don't have a source of reference to measure.
Exactly.
But ultimately, you're saying that in terms of the three-phase steps that you have on doing the physical exam, doing the imaging, and doing the analysis of the tissue, so the histology, that is really the dimensions and the approach to take.
Yes, fine. If you have a very, very strong family history, i.e. if your sister and your mother and your aunt all developed breast cancer before the age of 40, yes, approach a medical practitioner and ask them about genetic testing. They can send you for genetic screening and then take it from there, mainly to protect your children, because it doesn't really have a bearing on you as such, but these mutations often occur in your children then as well, with problems later in their lives.
We will be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Roll Back Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. We're talking women in the medical profession, specifically in terms of surgeons and breast health, with Dr. Nadine Bruiser and Dr. Carla Noble. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, picking up on our discussion, what I find quite interesting, men and women, we're different from an anatomy point of view and structure. And I recall reading an article recently, I think it was titled The Drug Dose Gender Gap. And it again almost reminded me of women living in a man's world, where it spoke about disease and drug testing that had been conducted on men, and had neglected research on the effects of the disease on women, as well as the impact of the drugs. I copied a piece of it here, and I'll read it to you. It says, studies have shown that women respond differently than men to many drugs, from aspirin to anesthesia. And researchers are only beginning to understand the scope of the issue, but many believe that as a result, women experience a disproportionate share of adverse, often severe, side effects. Until 1993, women of childbearing age were routinely excluded from trials of new drugs. When the FDA lifted the ban later in 1993, agency researchers noted that because landmark studies on aspirin and heart disease and stroke had not been included on women, that they couldn't find different thinking, what was the effectiveness of the drug. And what they went on to say was that women metabolize drugs differently because they have a higher percentage of body fat. They experience hormonal fluctuations in accordance with monthly menstrual cycles. And I wondered, you know, what have been your experiences on issues like this and your opinion?
Well, firstly, on this issue that drugs are not tested on women of childbearing age, I can understand that because of the teratogenicity of certain drugs, it causes mutations in babies that we want to prevent.
So it doesn't have an impact on the woman directly, but no. Like you were talking about with the gene component and the gene mutation, that it could have an impact on her children.
Yes, so say she is pregnant at the time before she even realizes it and she takes these drugs, it's going to affect the baby and someone has to take responsibility for that. The next thing is that in outcome of patients in general, we have seen, for instance, that women do much better in ICU. Women are more likely to survive serious trauma than men. And I know there are studies going on about this at the moment.
That's very interesting.
Why this is. We don't know whether it is the body fat or just the genetic composition of women. We don't know.
And how far, when did the study start? Very recently?
Recently, about 2-3 years ago.
That's very recent. It'd be interesting to see how those results come out. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Bruiser and Dr. Noble. It's been a pleasure talking to you today, but we're coming to the end of the show. And if I can ask you, lastly, in closing, if you could share a few words of inspiration and advice that you'd like to pass on to women in Africa that are listening to the show. Firstly, regarding cancer, so in terms of prevention, signs, detection. And secondly, in terms of how women could aspire and follow in your footsteps.
When it comes to cancer, please, please Don't be like an ostrich. Don't put your head in the ground. It's not going to disappear. All right. There is hope. You don't have to be mangled or mutated in any way. There is hope. Get to the right people at the right time and go and do something about it. The next subject for all the girls out there, if you decide on doing something, go for it with your whole being and don't be put off by anyone. It's going to be hard. You're going to bump your head against many others, but just persevere. Just carry on.
I think it's important when you're younger to decide what you want to do and to pursue that dream and to be persistent and have stamina and, you know, whatever the odds may then be against you, to persist and to do what you want to do. Because I think it's important, you know, to be happy, and I think that my job plays a huge role in my life, and if you're happy with what you're doing and you're spending a lot of time at work and you find that you're making a difference, then it really is worthwhile taking the longer road to get there. And then from a breast health point of view, I think it's important to go for breast screening and to do self-examination and then to act on that, even though you might think that a lump that you feel is nothing to worry about. It's just to go and have it seen to and checked out. And then once the diagnosis is made of cancer, is not to lose hope, but to get it seen to and get it treated in the right way, and to go to someone with a special interest in breast surgery and look at the possibilities of having breast reconstruction as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being on the show today. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Tune into our next program to hear Captain Jane Trembeth and First Officer Annabel Wundler from South African Airways.